Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
Discover over 100 episodes of Bartholomew Town on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
So in the treasurer's office, it's not just about balancing the books, although we do that. It's also about doing things that will help contribute to an economic recovery in Rhode Island.
I think we have a real opportunity here to turn the system around and to improve education in Rhode Island for thousands of students, both present and future.
Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. On today's episode, I sit down right here at the loft with Rhode Island General Treasurer Seth Magaziner. And as many of you probably know, this is the Treasurer's second appearance on the pod. We did an episode last July at his office in the State House, and this is cool because we get to follow up on some of the seeds that were being planted by the Treasurer and his office, and also take a look at the Providence and statewide schools situations that have developed since the last interview. Of course, these are not new situations, just in terms of the focus since the RICAST test results last fall. And of course, now with the Johns Hopkins report in the Providence schools and the state intervention well underway. So interesting to get the treasurer's take on that matter and a whole lot else. And by the way, good to be back after a few weeks off in terms of new episodes. I've been busy, though, recording content for you and actually filling in over on WPRO for Dan York and Matt Allen a couple of days, and also keeping busy with music. So good to be back on track, though. New episodes every Tuesday and Friday, wherever you get the Bartholomew Town Podcast for the foreseeable future. Support for Bartholomew Town comes from Lagunitas Brewing Company, helping to present Elmwood Songwriters Club, a recurring performance series featuring intimate sets by Rhode Island artists from a variety of communities, held at the Bartholomew Town Loft in the Elmwood neighborhood of Providence. All right, let's get right to my conversation with Rhode Island General Treasurer Seth Magaziner, his second appearance on the pod, but his first time at the Loft. All right, so we are here at the Loft with Rhode Island General Treasurer Seth Magaziner. Thanks so much for your time coming out to the Loft here.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
A real pleasure. We spoke about a year ago. We were just saying at your office at the State House. Similar in that no air conditioning and kind of an old historic building. So
yeah, that's right. This is much cooler though. This is a great space you have here, and we appreciate the invitation. So thank you.
A real pleasure. Let's get right into Bank Local. Let's talk about that. Kind of zooming in on any progress that's occurred since our last conversation, sort of the 36,000 foot view on Bank Local today.
Yeah, a lot. And just to remind the listeners, so you know, Rhode Island has a lot of great dynamic small businesses. Small business is vital to our economy. And there are a lot of small business entrepreneurs who have the desire to expand their business and hire more people. But sometimes they have a hard time getting their loans approved, especially if they are a newer business or a first-time entrepreneur or an entrepreneur from a historically underrepresented group. And the research shows that small businesses are twice as likely to get their loans approved by a community bank or a credit union than by one of the big banks. So what we've been doing is moving the state's money, the state's cash, to local community banks and credit unions to support small business lending. And this is us moving our money, the people's money, back home to help the local economy. I'm pleased to report that we're now about two and a half years into the program. We've moved more than $28 million of the state's cash back home to Rhode Island to local banks and credit unions, and we have helped those banks and credit unions make, at this point, more than 230 small business loans. And it really runs the gamut. It's, you know, businesses like hair salons and restaurants and even small manufacturers. And it's exciting. It's, you know, we've gotten calls from all over the country of other state and city governments looking to replicate what we're doing here. So we're proud of it, and we're going to keep it going to support the small business economy in Rhode Island.
So this is literally like expanding the amount of cash or access to cash that a Bank Newport or a Rhode Island Credit Union or some Navigant, whatever, that's basically what's going on.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And so if a local community bank or credit union is making a loan to a Rhode Island small business, you know, to a hair salon, to a restaurant, what have you, say that loan is for $100,000. They let us know, we move $100,000 of the state's cash to that bank or credit union. We, the state, don't decide who gets the loans. We leave that up to the experts at the banks. But we do this as an incentive and as assistance for these small banks and credit unions to make it easier for them to lend to small businesses. And we'll do a 2-to-1 match, a double match, for loans that are to women and minority-owned businesses, veteran-owned businesses, or to first-time entrepreneurs, groups that historically have had a harder time getting access to capital.
Right. There was some back and forth, I remember, in the chamber, the House chamber, about that component where trying to define who is a minority or who qualifies. But it should be on the nose, right? Just common sense. Everybody knows.
Yeah, exactly. That was not on our program. That was a different debate, but similar issue. No, you make a good point. And like the reality is, we have to acknowledge the fact that women and people of color in this country have, you know, always faced a steeper climb in getting equal treatment in our economy, and that includes access to credit and to banking services. And so that's why we do the extra incentive there. But again, we do this match for any small business loan in Rhode Island. We just do the extra incentive for those historically underrepresented groups.
Moving on to schools, Providence Schools, that's the story of the summer. It'll be one of those stories like the credit crisis or, you know, any negative, in a way, Rhode Island landmark, if you will, timeline landmark. At the same time, there's some proactivity going on around it. What's your position? I know you don't have a direct hand in the Providence school system, but in terms of Providence and then looking out to the entire state educationally.
You know, I'm hopeful, actually, about the Providence schools. You're right that the situation right now is pretty bleak, and I think that Johns Hopkins report laid it out in a very compelling way. But I think we have a real opportunity here to turn the system around and to improve education in Rhode Island for thousands of students, both present and future. There are a lot of places around the country that have had struggling school systems. If we are able to turn the Providence system around and make real improvements, it could be a great win for Rhode Island. So I hope that this is remembered when we're looking back at this 20 years from now as a time when, yeah, things were looking bleak, but we pulled together as a community and we were able to do something really incredible. That's not to say that it's not going to be hard. It is. But I'm encouraged by the fact that all of the major stakeholders – the city government, the state government, the teachers' unions, the business community, everyone at this point appears to be united in the belief that there needs to be significant change, and that that means that everybody, including all those groups I just mentioned, are going to have to be open to changing the way that they've done things. And I've seen that sort of self-awareness from everybody. So hopefully that continues, because that's what you need. Like, you need a common understanding that there is a problem, and also a common understanding that it's not about pointing the fingers at somebody else. It's about also taking ownership yourself and being open to changing the way, you know, that you've always done things. And so I'm hopeful. I started out my career as a public school teacher. I taught third and fourth grade elementary school in a public school district that had its share of struggles. What I learned from that experience was that every student, regardless of background, has the ability to thrive and to succeed if the school system is set up to allow that student to succeed. There is no student that, you know, should be written off before they walk in that schoolhouse door. So I'm optimistic. One way that we can be helpful in the treasurer's office, and we are working hard to be helpful, is on the school facilities issue. As I think you know, and we may have talked about last time, last year I was a co-chair of the statewide school construction task force. We developed a really bold plan to significantly upgrade our school facilities statewide, including in Providence.
Yeah, it was a staggering number.
That's right. And so it's a multi-billion dollar plan, because every child deserves to go to a school that is warm and safe and dry and equipped for 21st century learning. So the good news is we came out with that plan last year. It was approved by the legislature. It was approved by the voters, because there's a bonding component to help pay for it. The voters approved that by, I think, 77%, which is a huge number. And so now we are working to put that money to work, fixing schools across the state. Most of the, and we're seeing, there's going to be a huge surge of school construction activity, both renovations and new builds, mostly starting next summer. Some of it has already started this year. Most of it is going to start next year. And that includes in Providence. So we've already approved almost $300 million of repairs for the Providence schools, which will mostly start next year. And will include renovations and repairs to 35 school buildings in Providence alone. So there's good news there. On the school facilities piece, which is the piece that in the treasurer's office we pay the most attention to and work the closest on, work the most directly on, we're going to see big improvements in the next few years.
That's an important way to look at this conversation as well, that you know, I think the notion that the Johns Hopkins report came out and all of a sudden everyone went, whoa, wow, this is happening. That's insane. There already have been seeds planted for decades in Rhode Island. And of course, there's already been some action taken in different areas.
Yeah, particularly, again, on school facilities and school construction. So, and it's important, you know, certainly kids should be going to schools that are safe. But also, this is an important investment in our economy, too. This is something that I talked a lot about last year when we were promoting the bond and promoting the school construction program was, you know, if we want students to have the opportunity to be successful in the 21st century economy, the school buildings need to be set up to deliver that sort of education. So, you know, as part of this school construction initiative statewide, we're going to be building more science labs. We're going to be building more arts and maker spaces. We're going to be building more career tech facilities. These sorts of facilities will help students get the skills and the experience they need to enter the 21st century workforce, to thrive, and to benefit the Rhode Island economy for a generation to come.
Let's move out to infrastructure, just more broadly than just schools. What's your take right now on where we sit today? I mean, I know that the bridges, the roads, I mean, that there's always going to be those anecdotal problems and sometimes factual problems, potholes or whatever. But just generally speaking, not even looking down the line to putting a monorail through downtown Providence or anything like that, but just in the next year or so, what are you funding and what are you looking to do?
Yeah, so there's no doubt that when it comes to growing our economy, making our state more competitive, the quality of our infrastructure has been one of the biggest things that has held us back. And you need to have high-quality infrastructure to compete in the 21st century economy. So it means school buildings. It means universities' facilities, including research facilities, roads and bridges, of course, ports. We're going to need to build out our port infrastructure, especially if we're going to accommodate the offshore wind industry in the next several years. I think we've taken some big steps in Rhode Island recently to do these things. So we're doing the statewide school construction initiative. We've done some big projects at the URI campus, at their engineering school, their marine campus, their Bay campus, the chemistry program. Looking now at the URI Fine Arts building, because the A part of STEAM gets left out too often, but it's important. Obviously, roadworks and the governor's initiatives to repair our roads and bridges are important. I think the next frontier in infrastructure in Rhode Island over the next decade is going to be climate resiliency. So making sure that our coastal areas are protected from rising sea levels and from extreme weather events. So there's plenty of work to do, but the good news is in the last few years, Rhode Island has launched a number of initiatives to make our infrastructure higher quality. Those initiatives are beginning to show results now. I think you're going to see a big difference over the next few years as they continue to be rolled out. And we're going to put a lot of tradesmen and women to work in the process, but then longer term, it'll make for a more productive economy and a more attractive place to start a business and to live and to work.
Yeah, we saw those models, the RISD, URI oceanography joint models that showed parts of downtown Providence would just be underwater. In fact, where the Rhode Island State Archives are in a hurricane, a Category 4 hurricane, that's all underwater.
That's right. That's right. All over the state, you know, huge parts of Newport, you know, huge parts of, you know, Warwick and even West Warwick, you know, upriver, the East Bay where I'm from and where I grew up. And if we wait for that to happen, it would be tremendously disruptive. It would be more expensive to fix. It's better to start planning and preparing now. So, no, I do think, again, taking a big step back, we've launched roadworks to fix our bridges and our roads. We've launched the school construction initiative to fix our schools. There's a lot of work going on at all of the colleges, but particularly URI, around infrastructure there. And we've done some work at our ports. I think we're going to do more work over the next few years to upgrade our ports. But then beyond that, I think over the next decade, climate resiliency is going to be the next frontier of infrastructure. And it's vital in making sure that we stay economically vibrant into the future.
What about public transportation? There was some talk yesterday on Twitter about an expanded ferry service from Quonset to Block Island. Katie Davis had a story. I start chiming in on that saying, wouldn't it be great if we could take a ferry, a water taxi, maybe back to the East Bay or even upriver in certain places?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I understand it, the rebooted ferry service, so this is there was an attempt to do ferries 5, 6, 7 years ago that didn't pan out. They revamped it. My understanding is that the new iteration, the last couple of years, has been much more successful. So hopefully that's something that we can continue to build on. There's more we can do in public transportation for sure. I think doing more with even the rail lines that we have now, more frequent service between Boston and Providence, more frequent rail service to TF Green Airport, more frequent rail service to South County, that'll probably involve electrification of the rails at some point. Definitely all things that we should look at. And then, you know, I think Rhode Island, like everywhere in the country, needs to think about what does the future look like in terms of autonomous vehicles. You know, we pass them on the way over here.
You got a little roadie out there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, that future is coming sooner than I think people realize. And so thinking through how that plays into the transportation needs of the state longer term is something that we need to be doing now also.
It's fascinating stuff to really think about that. What about regionalization? Newport now has been, you know, with all the conversation about schools, there were rats in, you know, found in Rogers High School last year, and, you know, just the athletic fields aren't in great shape. There's problems there, and there's long-term problems that are citywide in Newport in terms of divide. But now this concept of an Aquidneck Island school district, Middletown was resistant to it until now Portsmouth says they're kind of into it. Is that the way forward? I mean, obviously we have West Kanawha, didn't work out, Nick Gorham.
Yeah.
But is that possible in Rhode Island? Would that be a fiscally responsible move from the Treasury's office perspective?
So when we were rolling out the school construction program, one of our principles was that the decisions for which schools to rebuild, which schools to replace, which schools to possibly consolidate or regionalize, these should be local decisions. The state's not going to come in and tell any community you have to regionalize or you have to consolidate or, you know, what have you. That being said, I think for a lot of communities it can make sense. I'm a product of a regionalized school system. I grew up in Bristol. When I was in first grade, we regionalized with Warren, Bristol Warren. And I think that the school district today is better and higher performing than when I was a student there, you know, all those years ago. So it can work in Rhode Island. It has worked in some places. Charahoe is a great model.
That's
also
my alma mater.
Yeah, yep. Charahoe has some great programs. By the way, you talk about career tech; they are the gold standard in Rhode Island for career tech programs. But at the end of the day, these should be local decisions. You know, when it comes to Newport specifically, I've had a number of conversations with leaders in Newport. I was with Mayor Bova 2 weeks ago talking about the high school. We, as part of this initiative, did a study of the condition of every public school building in Rhode Island. And the school building out of more than 200 in the state, the school building that was in the worst shape was Rogers High School in Newport. Mm. Mount Pleasant in Providence was number two, but Rogers was number one.
Wow.
So they know in Newport that they need to do something, whether it's a renovation, whether it's a rebuild, whether it's a regionalized approach with Middletown and Portsmouth. Again, the state is not, at least from my point of view, the state's not going to tell any community that they have to regionalize. We did put some extra incentives in the funding formula to perhaps make it politically and fiscally easier for communities to do that if they feel it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it's up to the municipalities whether they want to do that or not.
Yeah, it's a fascinating discussion. You know, I've been trying to spend more time in the northwest part of the state, you know, because I grew up in South County, lived in Newport, lived in Providence, always been connected to those areas. But I'll just go to the gentleman's farmer or whatever and just like sit there and, you know, whatever, have a conversation, trying to understand the lay of the land. And, you know, you bump into all these, now it's closed, but the Nasonville Fire Department, then the, you know, all these different fire departments, all these different you know, basically villages, and there's still a real, understanding of one's roots based on even just a village that dates back to the mill days. You know, it's that's a challenge in Rhode Island. I saw that in Charahoe too. There's a big difference between someone who grows up on Charlestown Beach and someone who grows up in Ashaway. No
yeah.
doubt about it.
Absolutely. No, it's my friends from Charlestown tell me, you know, there's a big difference between being born above the highway and below the highway, right?
Yeah.
No, look, that's one of the things that makes Rhode Island great though. Like for a small state, we're incredibly diverse, and you know, town by town or even neighborhood by neighborhood, you know, you have people with very different stories, very different histories, very different cultures. And you can see it all, you know, and be back home and sleep in your own bed every night.
Yeah.
It's great. It's one of the reasons I love Rhode Island.
Last few minutes here. What are your main goals going to the next legislative session? You know, you got a bit of time here, obviously. We're in the middle of August, but as far as just generally speaking, what are your main goals in this next year?
Yeah, so you're right. It's still early in the year, so we're still in the process of thinking about what, if anything, we'll bring for the legislature to consider in the spring. My priorities are going to continue to be what they've been since I took office, right? My priority from the beginning has been to bring leadership to the treasurer's office that is honest and ethical and focused on economic growth and expanding opportunity. So in the treasurer's office, it's not just about balancing the books, although we do that. It's also about doing things that will help contribute to an economic recovery in Rhode Island. So that's what we've done through Bank Local, helping small businesses get the loans that they need to hire. It's what we've done with school construction, putting people to work fixing schools so that our students will be more career ready. It's what we've done at the Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank, where we've put people to work on green infrastructure projects. And so as we form our agenda for the coming year, I know that the emphasis will still be on ways to use the treasurer's office to help economic growth in Rhode Island, because we've made progress over the last several years, but we're still not where we want to be yet.
Last question, looking back to the last election, just in terms of interacting with Rhode Islanders, not to the extent of now Attorney General Nirona, but similar to Secretary Gorbea, you were facing at best someone who I would describe as a renegade candidate. I mean, the guy's producing these graphics and everything, you know, so he's kind of lobbying things that you that are difficult to respond to, I would assume, as, you know, difficult to get in the mud. But at the same time, that doesn't allow you to necessarily communicate with voters in the way that someone who's in a, you know, more active debate. Do you feel like you've been able to, through the last election, get the pulse for Rhode Islanders? I mean, you obviously were voted overwhelmingly.
I've always believed that the people who succeed in elected office, both in terms of doing their job well and also winning elections, are the people who are the best listeners. So politics is full of talkers, but it's the listeners who are the good ones, right? And that's what I strive to be. So both when I was campaigning last year, but then also still today on an ongoing basis, I try to get out, listen to people. You know, we do a lot of listening sessions with small businesses. We did one in Newport last week. I'm going to be doing that in Cranston Street and Providence again tomorrow. But yeah, I think getting out, listening to people, getting outside of the echo chamber of the state house is important, not only in getting elected, but in doing our job well. So that's what I've tried to do. You know, elections are elections. I've always had opponents who, you know, wanted to make an election about something different than what I thought was important for the state. I do my best to ignore that and to listen to people and focus on what's important to Rhode Islanders who I meet when I'm out talking to the public.
Treasurer Magaziner, thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
That went by fast. Appreciate it.
Remember, there's well over 100 episodes of Bartholomew Town waiting for you wherever you like to listen to podcasts, or bartholomewtown.com and ripodcast.com. And I've got a new episode coming your way this Friday. Until then, I'm Bill Bartholomew, and we'll talk soon.